Welcome to episode 204 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. This show was recorded April 28th through the 30th, 2013. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. This week's episode of the Fredcast, an amazing report from a listener from the Ron von Vlanderen, the Tour of Flanders. But before we get to that, cycling news, including a verdict for Dr. Eufemiano Fuentes in the Operation Puerto case. Plus, the former REI CEO is now the Secretary of the Interior. Mayor Bloomberg wants to ban e-bikes. A Canadian journalist is spearheading a cycling etiquette guide. Yes, a product recall, a sat-nav that alerts truck drivers to cyclists, and much more. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes this episode of the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to have you here with me. And here, at least this week, is a hotel room, and that's fairly common for me. It's been quite a busy year for me, a good year in the day job, and so I am on the road once again and well on my way to, it looks like diamond status on Delta this year. Just way too much travel. And this is coming to you from a hotel room, and that's the reason why my audio sounds a little bit different. I am using my headset as opposed to my normal high zoot audio microphone, but I'm glad to have you with me. Got a lot to talk to you about tonight on this episode of the Fredcast, so stand by, lots to talk about. But before we get started, as always, need to thank my show sponsor. So pleased with these guys. They are just so good to me. And I know they're good to you too, because I hear from you as well. And of course, we're talking about Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Now, if you haven't had a chance, go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast, because I have chosen several products directly from Jensen's inventory that I think you're going to be interested in. These are things I use, things that I'd like to use, and also some products that I just think Jensen has some great deals on. Everything from apparel to components, parts, all the way up to complete bikes, and some bikes that they've got some great deals on, some just incredible discounts. As always with Jensen, you know that you're going to get a great selection of products at fantastic prices, oftentimes really low prices, incredible discounts, and as always, unparalleled customer service. So go ahead and check them out. They're at www.jensenusa.com/thefredcast, or of course, you can always go to thefredcast.com and click that link. And please do that. Either use the URL I gave you or the link that's on the website, or if you're going to call, please let them know you heard about us, heard about Jensen on the Fredcast. It definitely helps. It's good for them to know how much you appreciate their support of the show. So go ahead and check them out. www.jensenusa.com/thefredcast. You're going to be glad that you did, and you won't want to go anywhere else once you've been there. As always, we thank Jensen USA for their support, and we thank you for supporting Jensen USA. Hey, one more quick thing before we get into the news tonight, and that is this. You know, in the past, we have done Team Fredcast jerseys, and we've done the Fredcast socks. I am really pleased to pre-announce that we are just finalizing the design on a full Team Fredcast kit. It's a great design. I'm really excited. We're just finalizing a couple of things, getting a couple of sponsors' logos on the back, making a couple of minor tweaks to some of the things. We're going to be announcing it here in just a week or two, so please stay tuned to Twitter and Facebook, and of course, to your podcast feed and to the website. You're going to want to get in on this. I'm just really proud of it. I'm really, really excited. You will be too. So stay tuned. That's going to be announced really, really soon. I'm very, very excited about it. So get ready. The new Team Fredcast kit is coming at you very, very shortly. Hey, what do you say we get into the news, shall we? Well, topping our news is a story I've been talking to you about for years, probably since the very beginning of the Fredcast, and this is the verdict in the Operation Puerto case involving Dr. Eufemiano Fuentes. Now, as you may recall, we've been talking about this case probably since almost the beginning of the Fredcast 7 years ago, when it was revealed that Spain's Guardia Civil was investigating Dr. Fuentes, Liberty Seguros, Director Sportif Manolo Saiz, and others for a systematic blood and just general doping program in professional cycling, but not just in cycling. Eufemiano Fuentes was also implicated or purportedly involved in doping practices in cycling, in tennis, and in soccer. The trial against Dr. Fuentes and his co-defendants ended several weeks ago, and the verdict has been long anticipated. It was released on April the 30th. Dr. Fuentes was found guilty in the case, while his co-defendants, including Manolo Saiz, were acquitted. Dr. Fuentes was given a suspended 1-year jail sentence. He was fined €4,500, and he had his medical license withdrawn for 4 years. Now, what's interesting is that Dr. Fuentes was not found guilty of doping offenses, because apparently that wasn't illegal in Spain at the time involved in the Operation Puerto case. However, he was found guilty of quote-unquote public health offenses. Now, here's the really strange part of the verdict. At the conclusion of the case, the judge ordered that the blood bags, which really were the principal evidence in the case, that these blood bags containing the purported athlete's blood and therefore their DNA, be destroyed. And you can imagine that WADA is quite upset. The World Anti-Doping Agency is quite upset, and others are quite upset at this order, because it is hoped that by getting this evidence to WADA, that perhaps more could be learned about this systematic doping program in order to further work to clean up not only cycling, but tennis and soccer and whatever other sports were also involved in Dr. Fuentes' doping program. The Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, David Hauman, understandably gave a statement, and he was upset, saying, quote, WADA has carefully considered the decision rendered by the criminal court in Madrid in relation with the Operation Puerto. The decision to order the destruction of all the blood bags is particularly disappointing and unsatisfactory for WADA and the whole anti-doping community. Access to this evidence motivated WADA's involvement in this case, and this would ensure appropriate sports sanction processes against the cheats who used Dr. Fuentes' services. He goes on to say, WADA is currently fully reviewing the decision and any possible appeal or other action with its Spanish legal advisors and with the Spanish National Anti-Doping Organization. Now, the appeal deadline is May the 17th, so there's just 2 weeks to find out whether or not WADA will appeal. My suspicion is that they probably will, and this case will go on. But I think that it seems to me that it would be within WADA's purview and certainly in their mandate to get a hold of this evidence and try to figure out who else was involved and to bring them to appropriate justice under the WADA code. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., in a similar and unfortunate case, the United States government announced several months ago that they were going to join Floyd Landis's whistleblower lawsuit against Lance Armstrong, claiming that Lance Armstrong cheated in order to win the 7 Tours de France. Well, the Justice Department put its case forward when it filed papers last week in a lawsuit against Lance Armstrong, saying in its court filings that Lance Armstrong, quote, was unjustly enriched, unquote, while riding for the United States Postal Service and, in their words, cheating to win the Tour de France. Now, the U.S. Postal Service, for those of you who may not know or may not remember, put in about $40 million, that's $40 million, in order to be the title sponsor of Lance Armstrong's U.S. Postal Service teams when he won those 7 Tour de France victories. The filing that the United States Justice Department made in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., says that the Postal Service paid Armstrong directly $17 million from 1998 to 2004. Now, also named in the lawsuit, well, Lance Armstrong's director sportif, the former team director, Johan Bruneel, who is, of course, also involved in proceedings with the United States Anti-Doping Agency, USADA, who has also claimed, as part of that original proceeding against Lance Armstrong, that Johan Bruneel cheated in sport, and they are involved in arbitration proceedings, Johan and the United States Anti-Doping Agency, also named in the case Tailwind Sports. Much of the evidence in the case comes from Floyd Landis, who is the quote-unquote whistleblower in this case, and it should be noted that Floyd Landis, should the case proceed to court and should it be victorious against Lance Armstrong, Floyd Landis, as the whistleblower, stands to gain financially as a result of having brought the case. This is something that's going to go on for a long time. I am not going to be bringing you every single detail of the case. I'm sure we'll talk about it on The Spokesman, and I'll bring you the major developments as they happen, but I thought it was significant for you to know that the United States government has now filed its paperwork, and this thing is proceeding full speed ahead. Well, let's move on to better news, shall we? And let's talk a little bit about the United States Secretary of the Interior. Now, I want to be clear about this for those of you who are not in the United States. In a lot of countries, you have the Ministry of the Interior, which might necessarily have to do with what we would call here Homeland Security. The Secretary of the Interior here in the United States is a little bit different. You see, because the Secretary of the Interior here in the United States is involved with things like the United States Geological Survey, the Bureau of Land Management, and the National Park Service. So here we're talking about more environmental and outdoor concerns than we are talking about security concerns. And so with that in mind, a lot of people feel that it is really good news that the new United States Secretary of the Interior, the person in charge of the Department of the Interior, is an outdoor industry executive, the former CEO of REI Incorporated, Sally Jewell. Now, Sally Jewell is 56 years old. And what's interesting, what I think a lot of people don't realize, they know REI as the outdoor equipment co-op that's all over the United States. But what they may not know about Ms. Jewell is that she, before going to become the CEO of REI, she was working for Mobil Oil on oil fields in Oklahoma. And then following that, she also worked for a number of bank interests in the United States, Rainier Bank, Security Pacific, and Washington Mutual. So while I think a lot of people were very excited that Ms. Jewell has outdoor industry experience, I think that that's also balanced by her financial and petroleum experience as well. And I also think what a lot of people don't know, and this is interesting to me, you know, in order to be the president of the United States, you have to have been born in the United States. You can't be a naturalized citizen. What's interesting is Ms. Jewell was born in England and only moved to the United States when she turned 4. Great country, right? I think that's awesome. So President Obama nominated her as somebody who he felt had balanced interests when it comes to the environment and some of the other issues that the Department of the Interior looks at. Toward that end, Frank Hugelmeyer, the president and CEO of the Outdoor Industry Association, voiced his approval for Ms. Jewell's confirmation in the United States Senate, saying, quote, "The Department of the Interior needs a leader with a balanced vision for the future of the nation's lands and waters, and Sally Jewell is that person." Now, for those of you who might be concerned about REI, Recreational Equipment Incorporated, many of us are members of REI, they're interim CEO Brian Unmacht made a statement about Ms. Jewell's confirmation, saying, quote, "Speaking on behalf of REI's board and staff, we thank Sally for her 17 years of service to the co-op and wish her all the best with her new adventure in the, quote, other Washington," unquote, he said. "Thanks to her outstanding leadership, REI is in strong shape and well-positioned for the future. As she did at REI, Sally Jewell will lead the Interior Department with integrity, balance, and wisdom." And I think all of us share in wishing Ms. Jewell much success and luck in her new position as the United States Secretary of the Interior. Just a few hours by car from Ms. Jewell's new office in the city of Washington, D.C. is New York City. And New York has taken what I consider to be a strange step recently when the city council in New York City last week passed legislation to make it easier to enforce what apparently is already a ban on electric bicycles within the city, so-called e-bikes. Now, the legislation that was currently in place banned the use of bicycles, e-bikes, that went more than 15 miles an hour. But they said, according to the city council, that it was difficult for police to determine whether or not those bicycles were going faster than 15 miles an hour. And they felt that the bicycles were dangerous enough already because local food delivery and other delivery services were using e-bikes. And these bikes were often found on sidewalks going the wrong way in traffic, which, by the way, between you and me, is already illegal for any bicycle. Nevertheless, the city council felt that these bikes are heavier, and because their motors are quiet, they're more difficult for pedestrians to know are coming. Like bikes that don't have any motors at all. Oh, sorry, injecting personal opinion here. Well, as a result, they made it even more easier for this ban to be enforced by removing the speed limit restriction completely and making it easier for law enforcement to impound bicycles until civil penalties and fines have been paid. Civil penalties will be $100 for businesses that have e-bikes on their premises. In other words, you can't even own one and have it on the site of your business, or you're going to be fined $100. Second violations come with a $250 fine. According to Speaker of the City Council, Christine Quinn, quote, "Because we see them everywhere, many people don't know that e-bikes are already illegal. They're a danger to New Yorkers because they're significantly faster and heavier than regular bikes. This legislation will help to enforce the city's e-bike ban and will send a clear message to businesses that the use of these," her words, "dangerous vehicles will not be tolerated. Bottom line," still quoting here, "e-bikes are unlicensed, unsafe, and unwelcome in our city." It should be noted that New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has indicated that he will sign this bill. And while New York seeks to ban e-bikes, which I think you've already figured out my opinion on that law, while they're looking to ban e-bikes, the weather is warming up here in the Northern Hemisphere, and many of us are finally out of our basements and off our trainers and back out on the roads. And Canadian journalist Tom Babin, who is the features editor for the Calgary Herald up in Calgary, Canada, noticed that as soon as the springtime temperatures arrived and cyclists got back out on the roads, the war, if you will, the disagreements between cyclists and motorists and pedestrians started to heat up once again. And in his own words, rather than contribute to the never-ending back and forth cyclist complaints that are seen on Twitter, he wants to try something new. And he says, "Inspired by several cyclists in the past few months who told me that they feel the need for one, I'm asking for your help to create an urban cycling etiquette guide." I think this is a great idea. I've been urging you forever that we should all be better cycling citizens. If we behave well on the roads, that we will help to encourage our fellow road users, be they walkers or drivers or what have you, to also be better citizens on the road. And so I think Mr. Babin has a great idea and is really on to something. He says this isn't intended to be a guide for obeying the laws. He says that's why laws are written down. Instead, he wants this to be advice for living a peaceful, gracious life as a cyclist. He says a kind of Ann Landers for the two-wheeled set. He says if you're a motorist, and he admits most of us are motorists as well as cyclists, feel free to contribute as well, but this isn't a place for rants. The idea is to offer advice on cooperative living. And after all, we all have to share the roads, right? It's kind of that Rodney King, can't we all get along question is what he's asking. And so I'm going to ask all of you, let's contribute. Let's help this gentleman create what will hopefully be a wonderful reference for experienced cyclists as well as novice cyclists and for motorists, be they cyclists or even if they've never turned a pedal. I think that he is really onto something that cooperatively and collaboratively we can all contribute to in order to create a calmer, peaceful roadway for all of the users. So what I've done is in my show notes, I've given you all of the ways that you can contribute to this effort, Twitter, Google+, Facebook, and email. And what's interesting is there's already been a follow-up where Mr. Babin is asking for some clarification, some input and some advice on some more troublesome issues, some issues of concern where maybe there's several different ways that we can determine how to act in different situations. So I hope that you'll all contribute. Please go to the show notes. This is show number 204 and contribute in any way that you can. And hopefully this will go viral and will be something to which we can all contribute and to which we can all refer in the future. Kudos, Mr. Babin, for your efforts. And while we're talking about bikes and cars sharing the road, a story comes to us from Bike Biz magazine in the UK, written by our friend Carlton Reed, specifically talking about what's called over there SMIDSY, S-M-I-D-S-Y, which stands for, it's an acronym, it stands for, sorry, mate, I didn't see you. And that is a situation that research that Carlton talks about in this article is specifically trying to avoid. The research was carried out by a group called Bunnyfoot. Apparently, they're psychologists and human-computer interface experts who who tested 100 drivers in August of last year in the UK, specifically in London, Sheffield, and Oxford, in a study that was commissioned by Direct Line Insurance. And they found something very interesting. What they did was they did something called eye tracking research, essentially watching eye movements of drivers as they made their way down the road operating an automobile. And this is what they found. In the aggregate, automobile drivers failed to notice 22% of cyclists on the road. Let me make that clearer for you. That means if you're out riding and there's five cyclists on the road, one of those cyclists is essentially invisible to the drivers. And this is what the eye tracking research found. That, to me, is scary. And it should be scary to you as well. Now, it went even deeper. It looked at the difference between men and women and between younger drivers and more mature drivers. And what it found was that the younger drivers were the worst of all, failing to spot 31% of cyclists on the road, almost one in three bikes as they made their way down the road that they're sharing with the drivers. Sorry, ladies, unfortunately, female drivers were worse than male drivers in the aggregate at noticing bikes, failing to spot 26% of bicyclists. Now, as Carlton points out in his article, there is some question about the methodology that was used by Direct Line and Bunnyfoot in their research. But I think many of us would probably say, kind of anecdotally, that our own experience probably bears this out. As cyclists ourselves, we've certainly, most of us, been in situations where people have failed to notice us when we've been out on the road. And admittedly, as I've asked many of you, and as I've heard again anecdotally from many of you, and my own experience bears out, there are certainly times when, for whatever reason, we're looking at other cars, we're looking at traffic lights, we're looking at signs. Hey, admittedly, for many of you, it could be tuning your radio or setting your air conditioning, or please, hopefully not texting or using your handheld GPS or your phone while you're driving, you failed to notice other road users as well. Great example. I saw the tragic results of that recently in near my own home in Park City the other day. My wife was driving me to the airport. and the traffic was stopped and on a road which is normally very, very free-flowing. And what we found was a very tragic accident, which turned out to have been fatal. Now, it was said that the driver who was killed in the accident had been driving erratically and had been speeding. But what was clear from the news reports and from the witnesses, what had ended up happening was this driver literally drove into the back of a semi-truck that had been going slow. They had been distracted enough that they didn't see the semi-truck going slowly down a mountain pass, and they literally slammed into the back of the truck at full speed. So if you can fail to see a semi, an 18-wheeler driving down the road, I think it's also possible that you could easily fail to see a cyclist. And I think that that is what this research, this scary research, is showing. I have a feeling that there'll be more research to follow on to this, but we should all be aware of our limitations as drivers and of drivers' limitations if we're cyclists. By the way, parenthetically and interestingly, the study also found that 15% of motorcyclists were also invisible to motorists. So something that we all need to be concerned about and we all need to be conscious of as we are using the roads and sharing them with others. And while we may be seeing issues with bikes and cars and pedestrians all on the same road, the good news is that we are seeing more and more cities, especially in North America, adopting so-called bike share programs. And it's something I've talked about here on the show time after time after time because I believe in bike share. I'm excited to say that Salt Lake City has recently gotten its own bike share system, although it's small at the moment, just 10 stations and 100 bikes in a very small core portion of downtown Salt Lake, and I'm really hoping that that expands over the next months and years. It is a start, and I am not complaining. Downtown LA is about to get its own bike share system as well, with eventually having a system with up to 400 stations and 4,000 bicycles operated by the same organization who's operating the system in Anaheim, California. And of course, New York City is getting ready for its own bike share with its new City Bike program, a little bit delayed, but signing up more than 5,000 founding members in really its first 48 hours, which is really just incredible. It's launching very, very soon with 330 docking stations, 6,000 bicycles, which at some point will grow and expand to be over 10,000 bicycles. And one of my favorite bike share systems, one that I use frequently when I go to visit my daughter, who now lives in Washington, D.C., Washington's Capital Bike Share. On the weekend before tax day, so the weekend of the 13th and 14th of April, on April 14th, the Capital Bike Share in Washington, D.C. logged 11,368 trips. Pardon me. On the 13th, which was the Saturday of that weekend, 11,368 trips. Now, I'm sure it helped that was in the middle of the, sort of the peak bloom of the cherry blossoms in Washington, D.C., but that is a lot of people using bike share. And there is a great PDF that I've linked to in the show notes at bikeshare.com that's great. It's entitled 2013, the Year of the Bike Share, that's showing all of the bike share systems that are opening in 2013 in North America, stretching from Vancouver, BC to Tampa, Florida, from San Diego, California, all the way up to New York, New York, and Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's a great PDF. Go ahead and check it out. I am, as you know, bullish on bike share, and I am just so pleased to see it catching on in so many places. I was in Kansas City earlier this week, and lo and behold, bike share throughout the city of Kansas City, Missouri, and I was seeing people use it, and I think that that's absolutely great. Go ahead and check out the graphic. If you've got bike share in your city, or if you go to a city that has bike share, go ahead and check it out. It's a great way to get around a city, whether you live there or you're just visiting. Hey, by the way, one more thing. For those of you who are in the city of Los Angeles, they're doing kind of a cool thing. They're asking you to suggest a location for one of the new bike share stations for their bike share system. I've got a link in the show notes. Go ahead and check it out. Suggest a station. I think it's a fun way to get the community involved. And again, the link is in the show notes. And so thinking about the number of cyclists using bike share, as well as the previous story about sharing the road with motorists, one of the places where this has been a particular issue, certainly this came up during the most recent Olympics, is London, where the Lord Mayor of London has really placed an emphasis on the use of bicycles within his city. But there has been a growing problem between lorry drivers, high gross vehicle weight, or truck drivers, and cyclists. And now there's a new GPS system, or what those of you in the UK call a sat-nav system, that has been specifically designed to alert truck drivers in the City of London when they're approaching an area that has a high concentration of cyclists. The device is going to let these drivers know when they're approaching one of 100 potential accident spots, and they'll give that warning within 50 meters of approaching that area. Now, this device has been endorsed by Lord Mayor Boris Johnson, and it's called the Navevo ProNav HGV Cyclist Alert System. The cost of the system is going to be about £250 when it comes off the shelf. And of course, you may be able to find it less expensive elsewhere as well. According to a press release on the company's website, the ProNav HGV Cyclist Alert software has been developed in association with Transport for London to provide a commercial vehicle driver with an audible and visual alert as they approach a junction that's been determined to be a location where there are regularly high volumes of HGVs and cyclists. A warning symbol is displayed on the navigation system's mapping that projects a 50-meter radius warning zone around each of these convergence areas, and drivers are also provided with a short audible tone as a reminder, allowing plenty of time to check for any cyclists on the road. That's great to know, especially when we think about that eye-tracking research that we talked about earlier, so that now for those 20 to 30+% of cyclists who are quote-unquote invisible to drivers, now the drivers will have the alert, and hopefully that number will be dramatically reduced. According to Navevo CEO Nick Cesari, quote, "A navigation system is something a driver is likely to be listening to as they approach a junction, and so it makes perfect sense to also alert the driver of the risk of cyclists, reminding them to be observant and drive safely." Another city whose mayor has taken up the mantle of cycling advocate, the city of Los Angeles, recently hosted its annual Ciclovia event, which is inspired by Ciclovia, which started in Bogota, Colombia, as a way for individual citizens to get out of their cars and reclaim the streets for those who would walk or roller skate or, yes, even bicycle. They've been doing this for 30 years in Bogota, Colombia, and it has now spread across the world, coming to the car culture of Los Angeles now for several years. The most recent event took place a few Sundays ago, in which tens of thousands of Angelenos got on their feet and their rollerblades and their skateboards and their bicycles to enjoy a 15-mile car-free route from downtown Los Angeles near City Hall all the way to Venice Beach at the Pacific Ocean. It was very successful, lots of cheering cyclists and people with lots of smiles on their face. But of course, there were a few of the car-crazy Angelenos, I used to be one of them, who took to social media to complain. One man on Twitter saying, quote, "I get it, LA trying to promote riding your bikes, but seriously, this is the worst traffic I have dealt with." Another said, "I hate LA for this. Been in traffic for 1 hour." Yet to think, to take a weekend day to give people the ability to take those streets back, to get on their bikes, and to get out there and enjoy the California sunshine, Well, I think it's a great thing, and I'm glad to see so many Angelenos taking part in it. And for our part, in Salt Lake City, we're having our own Ciclovia. We're calling it Open Streets. It takes place this Saturday, this upcoming Saturday, May the 4th, from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. For those of you in Salt Lake City, it will take place on 300 South between the Intermodal Hub at 600 West and 200 East in Salt Lake. Now, ours is a bit smaller, and I've kind of taken people to task a little bit on social media for this because it's only closing 1.5 miles of downtown streets. Now, they're expecting walkers, bikers, joggers, and just anybody who wants to get out there and enjoy the streets. And it's put on by a wide variety of organizations, including Bike Utah, the Salt Lake City Transit folks, the Bicycle Transit Center, Performance Bicycle, and a number of others. But again, my personal feeling is Salt Lake City is a place that's known for its outdoor lifestyle. In fact, all of Utah is known for its outdoor lifestyle. As a matter of fact, there are banners up throughout downtown Salt Lake City proclaiming 2013 as the year of the bike. Why then are we only closing 1.5 miles of our streets? We've got these huge, wide streets and miles of them. We now have a new bike share system, as I mentioned earlier. Why are we only closing 1.5 miles? But I'm going to take it as a small step and hope that in the years to come, our version of Ciclovia, our open streets in Salt Lake City, will be much larger and will take up a much longer route. I mean, come on, folks. If Southern California, if Los Angeles can close 15 miles of streets, surely Salt Lake City can do better than 1.5 miles. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I know a lot of people that are going. As I said, hopefully this is just going to be the start of something that will continue and grow in the years to come. Meanwhile, in New York City, and by the way, this is one that is on my bucket list, this coming weekend on May the 4th will be the annual TD 5 Borough Bike Tour. This is an event that is 40 miles of traffic-free cycling through all 5 boroughs of New York City, and it annually attracts more than 30,000 participants. Now, initially, the event this year was threatened with a very large fee for the traffic control costs associated with the 5 Borough Bike Tour, with the City of New York claiming that because this was not a charity event, they wanted to charge for the traffic control for the police and others who keep the streets open for bikes and closed for everyone else. In the end, thankfully, the event will take place without the operators having to pay what was nearly a $1 million fee, because indeed the judge ruled, the judge in the lawsuit that was brought as a result of the proposed fee ruled that this was indeed a charity event and that it could go on without paying the fees. But a couple of changes this year, and unfortunately these changes were brought on as a result of the recent events that took place at the conclusion of this year's Boston Marathon. So first of all, typically the 5 Borough Bike Tour starts every year with a bit of pyrotechnics, some fireworks at the starting line, and that has now been canceled. According to the CEO of the event, he said, quote, "We want to be sensitive to the tragedy that occurred in Boston," saying, "If there's anyone out there who would be at all offended by that, that's not the message that we want to put out." So a simple thing that they're doing, and certainly people are sensitive, I would think, to mass athletic events, to the possibility of fire and explosion right now as a result of what happened in Boston. So I think that that's understandable. But the other thing that was put into place is new restrictions on what cyclists can bring with them in participating in the 5 Borough Bike Tour this upcoming weekend. So if you're planning on participating, listen up, because as of right now, you will not be able to bring with you backpacks, hydration packs, saddlebags, or any other large bags for the ride. And there will be checkpoints along the route that are going to be set up to ensure compliance. And if the police and volunteers do confiscate any of your items, they will not be returned. The only thing that you'll be able to bring are small fanny packs, water bottles, and frame bags for your bike. So keep that in mind before you head out on your way to the Finish Line Festival in Staten Island. Enjoy the Five Borough Bike Tour. It really is on my bucket list. I can't wait to someday get there and be able to participate. I hope that all of you who participate in this weekend's event, as always, enjoy the ride. And a ride that was on my bucket list, which I completed last year, and some of you might be interested in doing this year, is the annual RTC Viva Bike Vegas Grand Fondo. I told you that I participated in that last year at the After Interbike in Las Vegas. It was a great hot, but it was a great ride. And did I tell you it was hot? But otherwise, it was a great but hot ride. It was really. People don't really think of Las Vegas when they think of cycling destinations, but it was a beautiful ride through some great scenery by Lake Mead and over Hoover Dam and then up through Red Rock National Conservation Area. Just a fantastic ride, even though it was a little bit warm that day. And if you're planning on participating in RTC's Viva Bike Vegas Grand Fondo in 2013, and if you were on the fence about it, well, here's a good reason for you to participate, because Interbike recently announced that they now have, as part of their agreement with the Regional Transportation Commission of Southern Nevada, as part of that agreement, they're going to allow registered participants in the Viva Bike Vegas Grand Fondo to pay a small fee to be allowed to enter the Interbike trade show. So if you're a consumer and you've always wanted to go, here's your chance, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday, September 20th. Now, I've told you in the past, and I know we talked about in the spokesman, that Interbike has started their Interbike by request program, Interbike by invitation program, that will enable bike dealers to invite some of their best customers to go on that Friday, the last day of the show. Well, this is different. You don't have to be invited by your bike dealer if you're a registered participant in the Viva Bike Vegas Grand Fondo. All you need to do is show that you're registered, pay your small fee, and bypass your bike dealer, and you'll be allowed to enter the Interbike trade show, which I think is great. Pat Hoos, who is Interbike's managing director, was quoted as saying, "We view the Viva Bike Vegas event is the ultimate culmination of a week-long celebration of cycling. The RTC has done such a great job with this event, and it has been growing nicely year after year for the last 6 years. The participation numbers are significant, and now, with the event taking place on the Saturday after the show, it just makes sense to invite this group to Interbike. The Grand Fondo customer is a passionate cycling enthusiast and exactly who we want in the halls." For those of you who may not have heard my talk about the Grand Fondo last year, it's the RTC Viva Bike Vegas 2013 Grand Fondo Pinarello. And yes, I said that all in one breath. It is, they offer multiple different distances. The one that we did last year was the 103-mile Grand Fondo, but there's also a 60-mile Metric Century and a 17-mile Fun Ride. What's fun is every one of them begins on one end of the Las Vegas Strip, and you ride down the Las Vegas Strip all the way to the other end. And then, as I told you, the longer route that we did went around Lake Mead, kind of the reverse of the route of the annual Interbike ride that we do every year, the tour to Lake Mead. And then we went down and across Hoover Dam, which is kind of cool in and of itself, and then climbed back out of that valley where the Hoover Dam is, went back up into the Las Vegas area, and then around the Red Rock Canyon National Conservation Area. And then from there, back to the start-finish line for a great celebration. And hey, now I can also say that I had the opportunity to ride with a Tour de France champion, because Miguel Indurain was also involved in the ride last year. Anyway, if you're thinking about doing it, there's just another reason, because now you'll be invited to go to Interbike as well. And while we're on the topic of trade shows, it was announced recently that German Chancellor Angela Merkel is planning on being there to open the Eurobike trade show this year when it commences on Wednesday, August the 28th. It was announced that she's going to take about 2 hours not only to open Eurobike, but also to tour the show as well. Klaus Vellmann, the CEO of Messe Friedrichshafen, which is the venue where the show takes place every year, was quoted as saying, "We're very pleased that the Chancellor is coming to Friedrichshafen for Eurobike. This puts the topic of cycling and mobility in the center of the political and media spotlight." Now, for those of you who don't know, Eurobike has grown steadily over the last number of years into perhaps the global bike industry's preeminent cycling show. It takes place August 28th through the 31st, and the first 3 days of that are open just for those who are in the bicycle industry, but they do open to the public on Sunday, August the 31st. Well, we were able to get away with a show last time without a product recall, but unfortunately this time I do have one for you, and this time it's Cervelo Bicycles recalling bicycles with Aura Pro handlebars manufactured by 3T. The problem here is the bike handlebar clamps can detach during riding, and the rider can lose control, posing a serious injury. Now, the Aura Pro handlebars came as original equipment on 2013 Cervelo P-Series bikes, which came in black, gray, and red. The handlebars themselves say 3T Aura Pro and Ultimate Performance in white on the top of the bar. And the recall includes the P3 that came with Shimano Altegra and the P53 with SRAM Red. And of course, you'll also find Cervelo P3 or P5 on the bike frame. Apparently, 3T has received one report of an incident resulting in minor injuries. Now, these bikes were sold by Cervelo bike retailers between September 2012 and January 2013 for about $3,600 for the P3 with Altegra and about $6,000 for the P53 with SRAM Red. So, as usual, I do have a link in the show notes if you want more information and instructions on how to get this problem taken care of. But if you think that you are covered by this recall, even if you think you're just potentially covered, go to your bike dealer and get it checked out to make sure that you are riding a safe bike. One last story before we get into the news tonight, and that is about the use of the crowdfunding website Kickstarter to help fund projects in the bicycle industry. Two successfully funded projects recently that I wanted to mention to you. The first from our friend Carlton Reed. I mentioned to him earlier, Carlton of bikebiz.com, and also roadswerenotbuiltforcars.com. Carlton is writing a book by the same name called Roads Were Not Built for Cars, and went on to the crowdfunding website Kickstarter looking to raise about £4,000 in order to fund the work that he has done and will still need to do to get the book finished and off the ground. He reached his funding goal of £4,000 within, as he puts it, an amazing 20 hours, which is just incredible. In the end, raising over £17,000 towards his goal, and he's been great in keeping all of his backers updated on how he's going to be using that money and what they're going to be getting for their funds, and I have no doubt that this is going to be a successful book. And by the way, as a result of the exposure that Carlton got, I'm told that he has had some really important and influential contacts come to him looking to perhaps partner with him on this or maybe even future projects as well. The second project I wanted to mention to you was by someone that many of you may also be familiar with, and that's Patrick Brady from Red Kite Prayer. And Patrick Brady wanted to write a book called Why We Ride, a collection of what he calls his best writing on cycling and the cycling life. And by the way, on Kickstarter, you put together a video to as a way to let people know a little bit about your project. Carlton's video was stellar, as was Patrick's. Both very different styles. Patrick explaining in his video that one of the reasons he wanted to do the book was because of the incredible expenses that he and his wife incurred as a result of the birth of his son, who was born prematurely and was quite ill for a while, and in natal intensive care unit, and the expenses just continued to add up and add up, and it was sort of the inducement to get Patrick to consider actually doing something that he'd been thinking about for quite some time, which was taking what he considered some of his best writing and putting it into a book. And so that was motivation number one, to help defray some of those expenses, those medical expenses that he incurred. And motivation number two was the fact that he really wanted to put together not just his writing, but he wanted to put it together into a high-quality volume, a book that was artisanally published and printed. And Patrick was looking for $20,000 through Kickstarter, and he ended up raising over $26,000. If you're not familiar with Kickstarter, I definitely recommend that you check it out. It's at kickstarter.com. I've got links in the show notes to both Patrick and Carlton's Kickstarter projects. The reason I love it, it's just a great place to see some of the innovative ideas that people have for new products. Not every one of them gets funded as Patrick's and Carlton's did, and kudos, congratulations to both of them. But it's interesting to go see some of the innovative ideas that people have. Some of them do get funded. Perhaps one of the most famous is the Pebble Watch that pairs with smartphones to provide sort of a second screen for your smartphone. And it was at one time, and I don't know if it still is, but it was at one time one of the most successful or the most successful Kickstarter project. But it's great fun to peruse. And it's really great to see some talented people in the bicycle industry using Kickstarter to help further their projects for all of us who just love bikes and everything cycling. Moving on to pro cycling news, you may have heard a few weeks ago that Cycling Ireland, which is Ireland's professional cycling governing body, renominated Pat McQuaid for a third term as the head of the International Cycling Union, or the UCI. There was a, let's call it, cacophonous uproar as a result of Cycling Ireland making that nomination. And now, in kind of an unprecedented move, Cycling Ireland has withdrawn its endorsement of Pat McQuaid and has now called an emergency meeting of its members. That meeting will take place on June the 15th, and it'll take place in Dublin, and it is going to be called solely to consider the following question, quote, that Pat McQuaid be and is hereby nominated by Cycling Ireland to stand as a candidate for the presidency of the UCI at the 2013 UCI Congress, and that the said nomination be executed and submitted forthwith by the board of this company, i.e. Cycling Ireland. Now, Pat McQuaid has been head of the International Cycling Union since 2005, and as you know, he's been under close scrutiny by many in cycling media, as well as athletes and governing bodies, as a result of the rumors swirling around whether or not the UCI had some involvement in the Lance Armstrong and perhaps other doping affairs. So June 15th, we'll find out whether or not Cycling Ireland is going to proceed. And of course, there are other goings-on in the world of professional cycling, folks asking whether or not Lance Armstrong may yet come forward and provide whatever evidence he has against the UCI, perhaps in some sort of a deal to settle some of the outstanding issues surrounding his use of performance-enhancing drugs in cycling. But for now, Pat McQuaid is still the president of the UCI. We'll find out on June 15th whether or not Cycling Ireland is going to put him up officially for his third term. Well, let's briefly talk about results and rankings in the world of professional cycling. Before we do, just a quick clarification, a correction from show number 203, in which I mentioned that Peter Sagan won Milan-San Remo. Actually, thank you to a listener who pointed this out. I must have been tired or up late, which happens a lot when I record the show, unfortunately. It was actually Gerald Ciolek who won Milan-San Remo. Ciolek beating Sagan. who took second, and Fabian Cancellara, who took third. So my apologies on that one. Well, let's talk a little bit about the results in April. April 1st through the 6th saw the Vuelta Ciclista al País Vasco, also known as the Tour of the Basque Country. This one won the general classification, won by Nairo Quintana Rojas, the second place going to Richie Porte, and third going to Sergio Enayo Montoya. April the 7th, Paris-Roubaix, and man, Fabian Cancellara pulling ahead and beating Sepp van Marke in a final sprint. It's his third Paris-Roubaix victory and his third major World Tour victory in 3 weeks after winning E3 Harelbeke and the Ronde van Vlaanderen and the Tour of Flanders. Third place going to Nicky Terpstra in this year's Paris-Roubaix. April 14th saw the Amstel Gold race. In Amstel Gold, it was Roman Kreuziger winning in 6 hours, 35 minutes, and 21 seconds. Second place going to Alejandro Valverde, and third going to Simon Gerrans. In the Flèche Wallonne, the Walloon Arrow, it was Daniel Moreno from Spain and Team Katusha winning in 4 hours, 52 minutes, and 33 seconds, followed closely 3 seconds later by Sergio Enayo, and third place going to Carlos Betancourt. April 21st, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and that one this year was won by Daniel Martin of Ireland in 6 hours, 38 minutes, and 7 seconds. And just 3 seconds later, Joaquin Rodriguez came across the line, followed 6 seconds after that by Alejandro Valverde. And finally, the just completed Tour de Romandie, which took place April the 23rd through the 28th, and in 19 hours, 24 minutes, and 51 seconds, it was Team Sky's Chris Froome coming across winning the general classification. Second place going to the Slovenian from Team Katusha. 54 seconds back was Simon Spilak. And in third place, 1 minute 49 seconds back from Team Movistar and Portugal, it was Rui Alberto Faria da Costa. Now, coming up next on the UCI World Tour, it's the first of the Grand Tours taking place starting this weekend, May the 4th through the 26th. It's the Giro d'Italia. And by the way, for those of you who follow the Giro d'Italia on your iPhone, I noticed today that I got an update of the Giro d'Italia app. So make sure that you go into the App Store and update all of your apps so that you're able to follow the Giro on your iOS app from start to finish, and I'll bring you updates on that on the next episode of the Fredcast. So, following the conclusion of the Tour de Romandie on April the 28th, the World Tour rankings, very little change at the top, in the top five spots. Fabian Cancellara still leading. Second place, Peter Sagan. Third, Danny Martin. Joaquin Rodriguez is in fourth, and Richie Porte is in fifth, followed by Chris Froome, who climbs from number 21 to number 6. Simon Spilak climbing from number 18th to number 7. Rojas from Movistar moves into 8th place. Sergio Enayo Montoya to 9th. And Alejandro Valverde tumbles from 8th to 10th. But all of that is subject to change once we find out who wins the final Maglia Rosa in this year's Giro d'Italia. And with that, that concludes this very long news segment of this episode of the Fredcast. Well, rounding out the show tonight is something really special. You may remember on the last episode of the Fredcast, I told you that I had a listener and that she had emailed me. Her name is Matilda Hedberg Dowdle, and told me that she is a new journalist in the world of cycling and that she was going to be heading to the Ronde van Vlaanderen and the Tour of Flanders. And she offered to provide some audio content for the Fredcast. And I told her I would love to get that content from her. And to be honest with you, and Matilda, hopefully I've shared this with you, I had no idea what I'd get. And she sent me some samples of the way it would sound. And I got kind of intrigued because it had sort of an NPR feel to it. I really liked the way that it was sounding. She got back from the Tour of Flanders. It took her a little bit of time to produce it, but I'm going to tell you, it was well worth the wait. Not just, it did take her a little bit of time. And then, of course, I got busy and I didn't have the opportunity to get the show out to you. But I think you're going to be really pleased with the result. I listened to this on the airplane as I was heading on a business trip, and I was just smiling from ear to ear. I think she did such a wonderful job of capturing in sound what it feels like to attend and participate in a professional cycling event. And for those of you who have been to one, you'll get that feeling listening. And for those who haven't, you're going to want to go. Let me read you a little bit of an introduction that Matilda provided to me. She says, "My name is Matilda Hedberg-Dowdle. I'm just starting out as a cycling journalist, a sport that's proven to be extremely exciting to report on. Not only are there millions of fans who really breathe the sport, but there's so much that's just waiting to be discovered. With that in mind, I've traveled to Belgium in the Tour of Flanders for the 97th edition of the race. For the people of Flanders, it's basically holy, and the celebrations start 3 days ahead. It's 4th of July meets Mardi Gras meets Super Bowl. It's that big. And I think, this is me talking, I think that you will get from this reporting just how big this is, how excited she was to be there, and how excited others were to be there as well." Now, Matilda did the recording and the reporting, but this was produced and edited by Krister Hedberg. And I've put links in the show notes, not only to Matilda's website, but also to Krister's. I'd encourage you to click on both. Krister took some amazing photographs that I know you will enjoy. So that's a long introduction for Matilda's wonderful piece. I hope you enjoy it. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Matilda Hedberg-Dowdle from the Ronde van Vlaanderen.
Tour of Flanders, Ronde van Vlaanderen, one of the European spring classics. 100 years have passed since this race saw the light of day. It's 160 miles of cobblestones, steep hills, and fierce fighting to win. Climbs can exceed 20% incline, and the roads are amongst the most gruesome to ride on. It's also considered the most important race in Belgium. During the race, over 1 million cycling fans are gathered along the roads. Celebrations start several days ahead, and many fans go through loads to support their favorite rider. This is the race to win, because the glory is immense, and to the people of Flanders, it's a holy one. I spent 3 days in Belgium. I followed the fans, spoke with some of the cyclists, and ended up taking with me back to Sweden a memory for life. I have never witnessed anything like it before. The big race, which took place on Sunday, the 31st of March, was in fact only one of the races that took place that weekend. But we'll come back to that later. One of the biggest impressions you'll get when witnessing the Tour of Flanders on site is the amount of people who turn out to watch the race. People will camp for days out in fields just to get that one glimpse of the cyclists. And that's a glimpse that probably will only last about 20 seconds. But Ronde van Vlaanderen is a party. This is what it's all about. And I met up with some of the dedicated Belgian fans. One thing they all had in common was their favorite cyclist, Swedish rider Emma Johansson. Ranked amongst the top in the world, she competes for Australia-based team Orica Greenedge. The fans all live in the town of Singham, and they do anything to support Emma. Some, for instance, choose which races to watch depending on if she's going to compete. And the day before the Tour of Flanders, they all gathered in the streets, painting the roads with her name. And we went to Singham as the race started in Oudenaarde, about half an hour away. Usually, when the flags are out in the town, it's black and yellow. The Flemish flag, a black lion on a yellow background. This day, however, it's a yellow cross on a blue background that is shown all along the street. Swedish flag. And as the peloton nears the crowd, they all cheer with delight as they see their favorite cyclists in the front. And I caught up with Emma Johansson after the race. Overall, she ended up taking the third place. And I asked her about what it's like riding through Singham, her Belgian home, to the cheers of the fans, friends and neighbors. The race is done. How does it feel?
At the moment, I'm just very disappointed. I wanted to win and I tried to race hard. And yeah, I was really strong on Kvartmont and Paterberg. I felt really good, but yeah, coming into the finish, I knew as well it's hard to beat Marianne in the sprint, and I had some attempts with trying to escape, but yeah, she also knows that it, if she can close those gaps, she's faster in the sprint. And
we saw you when you rode through Singham. What's it like riding down the street with everyone cheering your name?
Oh, that's amazing. It was a bit cold at the start, but once I rode through Singham, I got warm straight away, and it really warms my heart to see all my friends and supporters being there for me, cheering me on. And it's quite crazy being a Swede, feeling like a Belgian. It's difficult to explain, but it's really amazing.
Well, I'm going to let you get on your way.
Thank you
so much. But Emma Johansson wasn't the only Swedish rider in this year's Tour of Flanders. 2 days before the race, I spoke with Martina Thomasson and Jessica Kilbom, two Swedish cyclists who race for the all-women's pro team Kramo Gogrin, also based in Sweden. And we spoke about what it's like riding in Belgium and also about the fact that the women's part of Tour of Flanders isn't as covered by the media as the men's races, despite the fact that they ride on the same day and finish in the same town.
So far it's quite sad it's not more that's been published and written about female cyclists, because people want to read about it, but if no one writes about it, then who will be interested in reading when you don't know that there are female cyclists that are doing a good job? So I don't see the point of not having more coverage. I think it should be even more, both with articles in the big magazines and with the races. They should have more live streams for our races as well, because people want to watch. And our racing is just as good and exciting as the men's. The races are shorter and more aggressive.
And what's it like racing here in Belgium?
Racing here is tough, it's hard, it's much, much tighter than a Swedish race. And
it's cobbles.
Yeah, loads of cobbles. Normally here in Belgium we have a bunch of over 100 girls fighting to get to the front. So the racing is both faster and you really have to put your elbows out to manage to get to the front and to be in the race. Especially with the Belgian roads, they're like big concrete plates that you have to stay on, and in the middle of the road you have what we call the Death Valley. So if you want to pass over to the left side of the road, you have to do a wee jump with your bike. So you really have to be focused all the time. So it's much more aggressive riding as well, with more attacks and harder, definitely.
For anybody who wished to try out the track on Saturday, the day before the pros took to the roads, a race was open for anybody wishing to compete. This year, 16,000 cyclists of all ages decided to participate. So I went up Paterberg, a seriously steep climb with an incline of 22%, and that's covered in cobblestones. I reached the top, panting with a small stitch in my side, and found an incredible sight. All along the climb, there were loud yells of frustrations, people nearly falling into the ditches beside the road. Some decided to carry their bikes up the hill, giving up on riding to the top. Many stopped to pause, and I decided to have a chat with some of the participants. How's it going so far?
Very cold, very nasty, but it's good to be here. It's something to look forward to every year, and hard training, and we're almost getting on the finish line, so it feels good.
How many times have you done this race before?
It's the third time, yes.
So how come you're doing this race?
I don't know. A bit crazy, but it's to be from here, it's your Flandrien, you want to do that if you can, and I don't know why I do it, but I like doing it, even when it's hard and tough, but when I'm looking tomorrow at a race, it's going to be like I was there too, and you have so much respect for these people more than, so yeah, that's nice.
Where are you from?
I'm from Washington, D.C., United States. My name is Erin Connor, and I race for Sticky Fingers. It's a vegan bakery in Washington.
How's it going so far?
It's going really well. I'm having a lot of fun. If you go too slow, you get really, really cold, but you got to keep moving. And I like the hills because they keep you warm. And when you're on the flat, there's the wind. It's really windy. But the other thing is there's riders speaking all different languages, and so you don't know what the customs are for on your left. You don't want to just whiz by. You know, it's a little stressful trying to avoid, you know, running into people because there's so many different levels of riders out. I'm pretty new, but I'm kind of aggressive. But it's been really, really fun. It's just exciting to be here. I'm excited to drink some beers and eat some frites after I'm done.
So is this your first time you're doing this race?
Doing this one, yeah. First time doing Ronde van Vlaanderen.
Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
I hope you have enjoyed these reports from this year's Ronde van Vlaanderen, a classic race that saw the victories of Fabian Cancellara and Marianne Vos this year. Coming from Sweden, where cycling isn't nearly as big as in Belgium, it was a fantastic experience, and I bet you I'll be back next year. My name is Matilda Hedberg-Dowdle. Thank you for listening.
Wasn't that awesome? What a great report. Matilda, if you produce a podcast, not only will I listen, but I will personally promote it as much as I can. That was fantastic, and I hope that you will go to additional races this year and in the coming years and grace us with your wonderful reporting and production. Brava to you, and bravo to Krister for the production. Great job. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed that. Please go and check out Matilda's website and Krister's website. The links are in the show notes. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Before we go, just a couple of housekeeping pieces, and the first one is the most important, and that's to thank our show sponsor once again, Jensen USA at jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Go to Jensen USA for an incredible selection of products at unparalleled prices with the best customer service in the industry. And again, check out Fred's picks at www.jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Thanks to Jensen for their support, and thank you for supporting Jensen. For show notes and other information about the Fredcast, or just to keep up with us in general, go ahead and check out our website at www.thefredcast.com. Of course, you can send us an email at any time. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Go ahead and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, where the handle is Fredcast, or send us audio comments at any time using the SpeakPipe page, or by just clicking the link on the right-hand side of the website, or use our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. And now, if you've been listening for any length of time, you know there's just one thing left for us to do, and that is to deliver our weekly PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com, the home of free weekly featured tracks and premium members content, of weekly 30 and 60-minute cardio mixes, and monthly 90-minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. You can find out more at IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Tonight's artist is Jason Norris. The track is called Window, and I think you're going to enjoy it. We'll be back very shortly with another episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. And thank you for telling your friends about the Fredcast. It's really, really appreciated. I'm honored and pleased to be able to bring this to you. So between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
There's always something happening out my window. There's always something happening out my home. St. John trying, fading and dying. This lady is crying, oh no. Fast car speeding, about an 8 mile reading. There's always something happening out my window. There's always something happening out my home. You know there's always something happening out my window. There's always something happening out my home. The owner is calling, the leaves are falling.
is smoking while the children are choking. The youngest keeps poking his nose. You know there's always something happening out my window. There's always something happening out my home. You know there's always something happening out my window. There's always something happening out my home. You can tell the time when the nibbity to drive and the kitties at the crowd when they have to say goodbye. The water's on the scene where the people didn't mean to stay all day. Out my home.